Well, hello everyone, and welcome to our group coaching call here for May. It's May 11th, 2016, and we're going to go ahead and get right to it. So, quick reminder, if you are on the phone, if you're dialing in through any type of phone or even Skype, the way to raise your hand is by dialing star 2. So star 2 will raise your hand. Everyone's muted, so that will show me here on my dashboard that that you have a question, and I'll go ahead and unmute you, and we can have a conversation. If you're on the webcast, which means you're just listening to me through your computer speakers, you know what to do. Just if you're listening, that means you're on the right page. There's a question field there. You just submit your question, and I'll see it here on my end. One quick thing, if you are on the phone, you dial star 2. Just please only dial it once, because if you dial it again, then it unraises your, it lowers your hand. So star 2 raises, and star 2 again will lower it, so don't do that. All right, so don't see any raised hands yet. It is anybody's game right now. I am ready when you are. All right, a couple of brave souls here. And Sharon, how are you? Good to talk to you again.
Oh, I'm very well, and nice to talk to you again, Ed.
Yes.
Thank you so for letting us ask questions. I have to admit I'm only about halfway through your presentation for this latest. And
okay.
I have been writing professionally for many years as a broadcaster first, and then a news person and PR person for many years. And I've written parts of white papers, and I've done many, many case studies and been editor of business-to-business newsletter for a major utility. But that was a while ago, although I have more recent utility experience, it's been more as a media rep. So I have to say, in terms of going after clients right now at that level, I don't have the confidence. You know, on the scale of 1 to 3, I'm like a 1 in terms of my confidence to pitch, because I don't feel good about my current samples, and my older samples I either don't have access to them, or they were before everything was electronic, which I hate to say because I'm getting up there in years. But I have lots of current writing that is more small business oriented or entrepreneur oriented, but that I don't know that that's really my target market, but it might have to be to start with. So those are my questions. I don't have good confidence, and how do you build that up? I'm having a hard time picking up the phone and sending the warm emails, even to people that I know that have said we need to talk.
Sure. So you're not alone. I bet a lot of people on the line right now are nodding their heads, because this is a very common thing. And I'll give you the simple answer first. The simple answer is you do it one step at a time. You do it now. You just start somewhere, and it's always going to feel a little scary. Now, keep in mind. Well, first of all, talking about the fear thing, if you're not somewhat fearful, you're not pushing yourself, right? So keep that in mind, and I have to remind myself of that. You know, you guys think it. Some people have told me, "Oh, you know, but you got a lot of confidence." No, I don't. That confidence is all relative, right? So I have confidence for things that I know I have a track record on, that I know I've done, and I know I could do it again. But let's face it, we're all on a different path, and we're all looking ahead. So to me, there are things that I'm looking ahead on that seem, frankly, frightful. So it's something we all have to deal with, and it's all relative. And if you're not feeling somewhat fearful, you're not pushing yourself enough. The way you do it is one step at a time. Start with relationships. Here's something that everyone needs to understand. there's only three ways to get in the door somewhere. You can either get in the door through your track record. So let's say, Sharon, that everything you just described happened in the past 5 years. So you had very recent samples. Everything was great there. You had results you could speak to. I mean, just no problem in that department. You can get in the door with a cold prospect with that alone, right? So you can. So that's one way. The other way is through relationships. So you know Bill, and you talk to Bill, and even though you're a little apprehensive and a little uncomfortable about reaching out to him because it's been a while, and Bill, because he knows you, you have some history, introduces you to Susan, and Susan takes your call because she knows Bill, and she trusts Bill, right? So that's another way. And then the third way is one I don't really talk about too much, but I really need to start discussing this a little more because it's actually quite common, which is just sheer luck because right place at the right time. So you approach a prospect and it just, you know, the need is big enough and urgent enough that he's willing to overlook a lot of things, he or she is willing to overlook a lot of things, and it says, you know what, Sharon, yeah, let's get started. Let's try this project. And you hang up the phone and you wonder, wow, how did the stars align? Because this is just pure luck. And you know it. And that only happens when that's a law of averages, right? You start knocking on doors and you just don't know which ones are going to open. But you know that if you knock on enough doors, then it's going to happen. So keep that in mind because those are the only three ways you can actually get somewhere. So where I would go, I would start with where you know people. And that's what. And you'll see once you go through the whole session, but that's why I recommend everyone start there because it's the easiest way and the least nerve-wracking way.
And if they aren't ideal prospects, but they're people who have said, like, oh, we need to talk. We probably need you as a blogger.
Exactly. You need to be very flexible, right? Because with relationships, you just don't know where it's going to lead you. And you need to be flexible enough to say, you know, yeah, I would love to talk to Susan, Bill. Thanks for, you know, offering to make the introduction. Even though you know that Susan's not really in your target market, that's okay. You need to be flexible because you don't know what kind of serendipities are going to come out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're hoping for, and that's what will happen for most of you. Serendipities, you'll look back. And you'll be able to connect those dots, right, in a few years. You'll look back and go, wow, isn't that cool how that kind of happened, how it manifested. But it's you can't plan for it. It just happened. But it didn't happen if you didn't take action. So be flexible. Tap your network first. Let's see where it takes you. And even for most of you, those first few clients, they're not going to be that glamorous. I'll tell you that right now. So lower your expectations. The key point here, and this is one of the key tenets of the program, is baby steps, right? So get those first few clients. You've been here before. You're just now relaunching, right, Sharon? So you're kind of
exactly.
Starting all over.
And 5 years ago, I could have approached anyone in the state of Florida or across the country more confidently, but I was working a 14 to 17-hour-a-day company job. And when I got laid off from that, it was so shocking that it was devastating, although I've gotten over it, but I don't have those contacts anymore or that open door anymore.
And that's okay. That's okay. So leverage the contacts you have today because you never know who knows whom. Okay. You never
right.
know. Bill, you know, you're just having coffee with him or catching up on a quick call. He may not be someone who could hire you directly, but you never know whom he knows. So yeah, just start there. It's not glamorous. I know that doesn't look like it's a clear path, but you have to start somewhere, right? The journey of 1,000 miles.
And the
confidence comes with action.
The
confidence and the clarity comes with action. You know, what's the metaphor? You can't, it's a lot easier to steer or, you know, once you're driving.
Yeah,
so,
okay. Okay, well, you've given me some ideas. I'm writing down more people that I know and have open, you know, Facebook relationships with but worked real closely with previously that I haven't contacted that know B2B potential opportunities, perhaps, at least to recontact. So
there you go.
Sounds good. Okay, that's
helpful. One last thing, just keep reminding yourself of the experience you do have. Forget about like when it was, and you know, you're an accomplished professional, and it's easy to dismiss that. We all think that something's missing, that what you need is out there. You have a lot within you already. You have the tools, you have the experience, you have what it takes, and you need to remind yourself of that. And that's not a rah-rah thing. I just, you know, you've been at this for a while. It's just that, hey, you know, it's so what? So it's been a few years.
Yeah, and I actually write a business-to-business newsletter every week, and I'm trying to curate more so that the articles that I do write or that I curate and put my own touch to are things I can use as samples. I just also need to finish working on my website, and I'm in the process of doing that, and then I will feel better about everything, too.
Oh, there you go. So, yeah, you're doing something now.
Yeah, and I'm trying
better.
And everything as things I can use as samples, and I have my name on the newsletter, which I didn't have for the first 8 months I was doing it. And anyway, so I'm working in that direction. Thank you so much for the one step at a time strategy.
Oh, you're welcome. Very welcome. And yeah, I'm glad you asked that, because believe me, again, you're not alone. Okay, next up I got I don't have a name, but it's a cell phone out of Minnesota.
Hello. Hi, this is Michael Gibson from Middle Isle,
hey,
Minnesota.
Michael. How are you?
Hi, Ed. How are you today? Real good. I've got a question about the assignment we have this week about the solid prospects list.
Okay.
And I've always wondered about this because I've had 10 years' experience in life insurance and annuities.
Okay.
And I've always been business-to-customer relationships. And so I've been online doing research, as you recommended, looking at publications. And everything I see is always about a company to a customer, you know, how to improve yourself in retirement and through certain insurance products or annuity products, but it's, I never see any business-to-business type of relationships. Where am I missing? Where should I be researching to find that kind of relationship?
In your world, so insurance and financial products?
Yes, mostly, right, exactly, annuities and life insurance, disability insurance, or even long-term care insurance. It's always business-to-customer relationships I see in all these periodicals. And I'm trying to figure out, what is the B2B relationship in this industry?
Well, so first of all, I'm not an expert in that industry at all. So you would know better than I would in terms of the product supply chain, if you will. But one that comes to mind, and again, you'll be able to see my lack of understanding here in a minute, but one that comes to mind is, so these companies, many of them sell to other companies for their employee benefit programs, right? So if IBM is offering, so it's got a benefits package, somebody's pitching them to offer their short-term disability products to their employees. So that would be a business-to-business transaction, right?
Right, right, yeah.
Yeah, so it would be consumer products, but somebody's got to pitch it. So I had a similar situation a couple of years ago. I wrote a white paper for a credit union, a mid-sized credit union in the Midwest, and I thought, well, at first I thought, well, this is way outside my comfort zone. And not only that, but credit union, that's the consumer play. I don't think he can open a business account at a credit union. But here's the deal. They needed a white paper to help a new team they had created pitch credit unions as an extra employee benefit.
Okay.
So it's a no cost, right? It's basically, look, IBM, you can offer our credit union services to your employees. It doesn't cost you anything extra. Here are the benefits to your employees. If you're looking for things to add to your benefits package that don't really cost you that much or very little, this would be a great fit. You get better rates on loans, very convenient banking, yada yada yada, right? So
So
there are those things, those that play where consumer products are being pitched to other businesses. However, I don't know exactly what they are or what they're called, but I know that there are a lot of financial products being sold to other businesses to diversify risk, manage risk. Those are B2B. Those are pure B2B products. There's a guy, you may want to listen to this interview. Let me find. I interviewed him for my podcast last year.
Mm-hmm.
And his whole thing is B2B financial services. He's actually here in Atlanta. He's a great guy, Don Sadler. Don Sadler, I'll give you the episode number here in a second. Episode 48. So b2blauncher.com/episode48. So Don's always worked in the financial services industry, and he built his business, freelance writing, copywriting business on the side. And it's B2B financial services. He is very, very busy. He does very, very well.
Great. Thanks for that contact.
Yeah, and that might give you some ideas. And then if you go to his website, you'll also get some ideas in terms of what clients he's written for. And then, not that you're going to go after them necessarily, but you could look at those companies, and that might spark some ideas.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah. Because I know, for instance, companies are looking to figure out how to get rid of their pension plans because it's costing
yes.
them too much money. And that's where I thought annuities would be a huge benefit, where the annuity company could come in and take over that benefit for a company, take over that liability. I just have to find out how to get into that market.
Yeah, so you want to get in with the companies that are already pitching that.
Right.
Right. Yep. They already got it. You're not trying to convince anyone, hey, you guys need to create a product for this. No, that's already there. It's just they're going to need marketing materials to help sell their version of their idea.
Right. Okay.
Yeah,
yep.
So start going down that. I think if you get to some of those companies and start looking down that path, then that will give you, let's face it, they're just not household names in many cases, or they're household names for their different divisions that many people don't even know exist because they're selling to
right.
businesses.
All right. Thanks, Ed. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. All right. I think this is Yilda in San Antonio. How are you?
Hi.
How's it going?
Can you hear me? I'm fine, thank you.
Yeah. Excellent.
Okay, I have two questions.
Okay.
The first one will be, I'm really interested in doing case study.
Okay.
However, that's one of the samples I lack.
Mm-hmm.
I was considering probably to go, I have a friend of mine, and she's a realtor, and in fact, she's the one who... I was flying her before, and she was the one who helped me find the home and everything, the neighborhood. I don't know if it's going to be a conflict of interest if I offer to do a case study about her and myself, or should I probably use someone else's?
No, I don't think that would be a conflict of interest, but let me suggest something slightly different. Instead of the success story about how she helped you, what if you did kind of a pure case study, a success story about how she helped another client?
Okay.
And the reason I say that is you're not going to get the full experience if you are the test subject, right? If you are the happy customer or client in this case, you want, if you're going to do it, I would try to get the full experience because you want to be able to interview this person.
Yeah,
and you learn a lot when you do that. But if you interview yourself, well, that's kind of an odd thing to do, right? you already have all the information. You wouldn't really interview yourself. So something would be missing, and it wouldn't be, I mean, if you're going to go through the effort, it wouldn't be as good a sample because you are the person that's being written about.
Okay. And then I'm sorry.
No, I would think she'd be very happy if you offered to do this for her, you know, just with another client. Maybe tell her, look, can you think of someone who maybe had kind of a unique challenge and you're able to help them and they're really happy.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you, Ed. And the other question would be about this week's assignment.
Okay.
In particular, I'm building my list of solid prospects, right? And what I'm doing is rating them from 1 to 5, depending on how many channels of marketing they do and how stronger they are on their marketing.
Okay.
Should I start with the ones meaning the lower scale one, or do you recommend just to get the solid ones, that the ideal ones?
You know, it doesn't really matter, and here's why. This exercise is really more about just getting used to compiling a very small list, right, 5-10 prospects that you don't know, and just practice writing some warm emails, which we're about to get into, and just reaching out to them. It's more about learning the process and going through it than it is about optimizing, if that makes sense, right? So you're not necessarily trying to figure out some sort of algorithm to come up with the best ones to start out with. I would just pick 5 or 10, and then very soon you'll start reaching out to them. And in fact, I would detach myself from any expectations in terms of an outcome. Just don't worry about, you know, what results you get, because again, right now you're just trying to go through this process, because this is the sort of thing that sounds really nice on paper, but until you start doing it, you don't realize where the challenges are going to be. So that's why I want you to start doing it, so you get used to walking through this process.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. And then we're going to about to – so you just start with a list. Don't worry about the quality, and then we'll start. I'll show you in the next session. The next few sessions are going to be kind of back-to-back. So you know how we've had a little bit of a break there to help everyone kind of catch up and get their site up and running. But now we're going to start moving a little bit faster. So we're going to get right into prospecting. And then at this point, everyone can kind of adjust their effort level based on where they are and how fast they want to go, how fast they want to get to where they want to go.
Okay. Great, thank you.
Okay. Oh, you're welcome. Quite welcome. Great questions. All right, so let me take one more question here on the phone, and then I'm going to go to the – let me see if there's anything on the webcast first. Yeah, okay. All right. This is it's an Arlington, Texas number. That's all I know. You are on.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Ed.
Hello.
This is Robert. I'm actually in College Station, Texas, but that's where my phone number. Phone number thinks it is. Okay, I've got several questions.
Okay.
First thing is, I've actually been doing prospecting for a while, doing emails at my target industry, and I decided that I wanted to. I haven't had a lot of success in terms of responses. I decided to change the way I was doing a little bit and do an email plus a brief video attachment, because I've basically, well, two reasons. A, because I've seen statistics that say that people are much more likely to read or look at a video than just to read an email. All the emails have been the short introductory, would you like to have an introductory phone call kind of thing with me. So I'm just finishing up my first video. I'm sitting here with the Adobe Premiere in front of me as we're talking. And so I guess my first question is, have you ever done email prospecting with a video, and do you have any suggestions about that? If not, I'll go to the next question.
I have not. So I have not. I have done some with audio as an experiment, but not in this market. Just kind of a – so it is nothing fancy. Basically a quick audio memo.
Right.
Think of the audio memo on your phone, right? Memo recorder. And so sending it as an attachment and, yeah, just very personalized.
Right.
And I've had good success with that, but to full disclosure, I haven't tried it in a B2B setting. I've only tried that with coaching prospects.
Okay. Well,
in
next time
very,
we work
in any way.
In a month, I'll let you know how well it went. I've got a good prospect list. It's going to go to 190 companies that I've either previously sent things to, or I've qualified them as the marketing person in the business that I want to get to.
Okay.
Second question.
And is it going to be one video for all of them, or is it one video personalized for each person?
It would be a lot of work to do one video for each one of them. It's one video for all of them.
Okay. Yeah. So I just want to make sure everyone understands, and you're free to try it. This is not my recommended approach, at least not initially. It sounds like you've tried some other things.
Right.
You know, go ahead and give it a go. Next week, I'm going to show you and go through warm email prospecting, and that may give you some other ideas as well. But I just want to make sure everyone understands. This is not what I'm going to have everyone do. So in case everyone's freaking out, oh my gosh, you mean I got
to
do a video? So Robert's experimenting with something.
Within the B2B training thing that you did this summer with several other people, and I heard about your warm email thing, and I actually tried it, and I got a little bit of response, but on average, it took me a day's worth of research to find enough information about somebody to write one email, and I decided that I would starve long before.
Yeah. You need a 20-30 minute deadline. That's a limit, I should say. Yeah. It's
okay.
If you're not finding it, and I'll show you how to find them, if you're not finding it in 20-30 minutes, you need to move on. In fact, my limit, and it'll take you a little bit of time and practice to get there, but my limit is I will not spend more than 30 minutes, period, from beginning to end. So that is from the moment I find someone I'd like to email to finding their name, contact information, drafting the email and getting it out the door, no more than 20-30 minutes.
Okay.
Otherwise,
I was looking,
forget it. Yeah, it's too much.
What I was doing was trying to find some point of contact. In other words, if I did enough research, I found, we're both alumni of this school. Doing that research took me, you know, like a couple of hours to find that kind of stuff. So, okay, in any case, let's go on to something else.
Okay.
The second thing is networking with people that we already have. I've, in the past, when I've been employed by other people, almost always they've come to me to hire me. I've never gone out and networked to get a job before, so this is something new for me. So I came up with a list of three people that would be potentials in my target industry. First guy I'll call industry luminary. I've actually worked for two companies that he started, and he as recently as 5 years ago. So, and I'm on a first name basis with him. I'll just tell you about these people, and you can give me some ideas about what you think I should do with them. So there's industry luminary. And their second one was is an independent attorney who I know represents people in my target industry. She and I were both engineers 25 years ago at the same company. I know she knows who I am, and she was she's a second level networking link from somebody else, and I know that she'd be willing to give me a few minutes on the phone. And the third one, the guy was, he and I were both engineers at the same company 25 years ago. He's now the CEO of a 40-person company and in my target market. So you have any? So I've got industry luminary, independent attorney, and engineer turned CEO. And I wonder if you have any words of wisdom about networking with people of those various ilks.
So yeah, that's great. I would first of all, I would reach out to all three of them.
Okay.
Well, now, when you say networking, are you talking about reaching out to them and see if you could
yes.
get a quick call?
Well, I have all of their emails. I have all their phone numbers. I was planning on starting with an email that said, since none of them know, I take it back, the attorney knows that I'm in this business now, but let's just assume that none of them know that I'm in this business. So I was thinking about sending an email saying, hi, we haven't talked in a while. I've started my own company, and I was wondering if you had a few minutes of your time to talk about blah, blah. And the interesting question is, what's the blah, blah?
Mm-hmm.
And in each case, they'll all, I mean, two of them I've talked with, and the third one, he'll remember me. So, but I'm just totally new to this way of connecting to people. I'm not a natural extrovert that just calls on random people. I've had the good fortune of having people call on me to hire me in the past.
So, yeah, and I'm with you. Just for a couple of things. First of all, keep in mind that that's where you want to go anyway. Over time, you want most of your business to come to you instead of you having to knock on doors.
Yeah.
I think the best way I can answer this question is, well, first of all, this is exactly what the next session is going to be about.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sorry. I can wait a week.
No, yeah, yeah. For now, I would, you know, work on what you're working now, right? You're working on that video.
Yeah.
You're going to do this experimental campaign. So
yeah.
give that a whirl. Save these three contacts until the next session.
Okay.
And I think you'll see actually the next two sessions. I'm going to give you quite a bit on all this. So
okay.
I have actually very specific scripts. And script samples and archetypes that I'm going to give you for people you already know, people you don't know, and I think you'll get some really good ideas from there.
Okay, great. Well, then I will just put that on hold. As you say, I have other fish to fry for the moment. And particularly knowing that you're going to do that, that's just great.
It's just I hate to give you kind of a little nugget when it's not really going to answer the question in full. So.
No,
you can hold tight until next week, you'll have some very specific examples. But, hey, the good news is I think all three of those sound fantastic.
Yeah. Okay.
And, yeah, I would – those are from – you know, if you remember from the session this week, so those are all connectors, very high-level connectors.
Right. Actually, the third one could hire me. I mean
– Yeah, the third one is a golden nugget. Yeah.
And I didn't even know this guy was there. I was just doing my prospecting and found out, hey, I know that guy. Anyway, okay, the third question is, I have a local friend who's not in anywhere in my target market. He deals with consumers and does home renovation. And he's got a good business. And I was talking with him about his marketing needs, and it turns out that he needs some video scripting and possibly production work to be done for some simple things that I know how to do. And I guess he said, I pay you something, and I'm not sure that he knows what I would want to charge, but I think I might be willing to do it just for the reference if having a reference from something that's completely outside of my target area is not detrimental. In other words, I put on my website Joe's Flooring and Renovation is on my list of references. Are people in high tech industry going to look and say, that's weird, or they're not going to care? I mean, even if the guy gives me a glowing reference for the work that I did.
So what is your target market? Is it high tech?
Yeah, well, it's a very specific, it's cybersecurity.
Okay. So it's not going to carry a ton of weight, but then again, I've been where you are. So if you saw my website in late 2003, what you would have seen is I'm going after, early 2004 at this point, I'm going after high-tech companies, and the samples are not samples of high-tech companies. One is a self-published author of quilting. one is a advertising company.
Right.
One is a friend of mine who basically had a training company. I say company, it was really her.
Right.
And eventually what happens is somebody's willing to give you a shot based on what they see today. Based on what they see right now. Remember what I said earlier? Like, it's just the right place at the right time. They're desperate enough, or maybe not desperate, but the need is high enough that they don't have the time to go searching, and the risk is low enough that they're willing to give you a shot.
Right.
So those things don't really matter. So there's that, number one, is at this point it may not hurt you. Maybe it could help you a little bit. But I think the biggest gain could be from just learning to work with a client. Have you had a freelance client yet that's actually paying you? Or would this be? Okay. So just going through that experience I think is invaluable, and the confidence that could come from that, the increased confidence in just the practice is, I mean, I think that's a good experience, even if you do this for $250.
Right.
You know? I wrote a letter for a second cousin of mine who's a consultant in the food industry in California, and what did I tell him? I want to say, I told him, look, I'm supposed to be charging about $1,000 for these letters. It was a lead generation letter. But why don't we do this for $300? And he felt good about it. He's like, great. And he loved it. And, you know, and I got to work on a paid project, which boosted my confidence. The other thing, too, the reason I like paid in those situations, if you can do it for a fee, is when the client pays you something, even if it's $100, $200, there's a huge shift in their behavior.
Yeah.
It's like they make this physical commitment to you and to the project, and it makes a big difference from not paying you anything in terms of how seriously they take it.
Yeah, and his business is doing well. He can afford to pay me something.
Okay.
Probably not what I want to charge the clients of the future, but... Yeah.
Well, tell them when you agree to something, just tell them, look, this would normally be X amount, right? So I'm doing this because, you know, I love you and because I'm trying to get some traction, but also make sure they understand this is a one-time thing. So
he
says, Robert, can you help me with this other one for the same price? No, that's
right.
You can't do it.
Right. Okay, that's a good idea. Tell them that this, for this time to get you over the hump and to get this on my resume. All right. That sounds good. Okay, well, I'm looking forward to next week's session.
absolutely. And good luck over the next few days as you send these out.
Okay, thank you.
Keep us posted, okay?
I will, definitely.
All right, Robert.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let me go to the webcast. A couple of questions have come in. Somebody asked, it didn't have a name, so I apologize. Hey, Ed, have you had a chance to view my website and has said something you'd like to ask or say here? I've added a few of my work testimonies since I've had no real testimonies yet. Is it okay? All right. So, gosh, I have to check. So I'm doing like one or two of these at a time, guys. Give me, you know, two, three, up to four business days. It depends, or I should say 4 days, period. But I think I only got right now one. Let me go to the forum and see, website review thread. I think there was only one there right now that I haven't done. This must be from Christy. Christy, I just saw it yesterday, so I did a couple this morning that were ahead of you. I will probably not get to yours this afternoon, so it will be tomorrow. But don't worry, I got it in the queue. I will make sure to get you a good review, just like I have with everybody else. It's just a few of these, when they come in kind of all at once, then there's a little bit of a queue. So don't worry, I haven't forgotten about you. I will get you feedback tomorrow for sure, and I'll post it there and tag you in the forum, so you know that it's there. Okay, so star 2 raises your hand. James had asked how to ask questions. So if you're on the phone, star 2 raises your hand. And while I'm waiting, there's one other question that came in from Taylor. Ed, what do you think about working toward getting some clients to sign retainers? For example, a six-month contract for a set amount, depending on amount of work, with a reevaluation at the end. I heard the podcast with those two ladies that worked with ad agencies and marketing agencies yesterday, and that sparked the idea. Yeah, so I love, love, love retainer agreements. Have been, man, I can't even tell you the many benefits I've gotten from. I've had four retainer agreements in the past. They've been extremely profitable, very rewarding. However, there's a specific way I like to structure them. And not only that, but I strongly recommend that you wait and pitch a retainer agreement once you've been working with a client. So let me rephrase that. Don't offer a retainer agreement to a new client. My recommendation, Taylor, and to everybody, is start working with a client, get to know them, let them get to know you. And when you see an opportunity where it would make sense to offer some sort of retainer package, then go ahead and do that at that point. But don't do it as a way to get in the door. Don't do it for the first go around. It's just the chances of failure are really, really high. The reason, and I'll tell you a couple of reasons why. There's actually several, but one of them is that the best retainer agreements are those that are based on trust. You've been working for the client for a while. They trust you. They love your work. You really like them. You want to do more with them, and you can't know that until you've done at least two or three projects together, maybe even more. So, and then the way you're going to structure them is you're going to take the focus away from time. You're not selling hours. You don't want to do that, even though that's what 95% of people do. In the creative fields, that's, you know, I'll sell you a block of hours, you know, and you that's the way they're going to want to do it if there's no trust there yet. So what I recommend is very different. It's a little bit out of the scope of what we're doing here right now. I'd be happy, Taylor, if you have a situation where you feel it'd be a good fit, I'd be happy to tell you more. But so let me know where you are. But bottom line is, wait until you've launched, that you feel comfortable where you are, that you have a client, where there's a relationship there, and then it's something I would definitely consider and look at. All right, so got some people in the queue. Let's see, Jupiter, Florida, London, Ontario. I'll get to you in a second. This might be James in the UK. James, is that you?
Hey, Ed. Can you hear me?
Hey, you're on. Okay, good.
Great. Okay. Hi there. So I've got quite an interesting opportunity that I just want to make the right steps towards it. I'll give you as brief as I can with the background.
Sure, please
so
do.
The opportunity is in healthcare innovation. it's basically it's a writing service that is out of my direct area of expertise, but I have a contact that is willing to listen to my pitch. Now, what's happened is he's given me a sort of, I don't know how you describe it, I'd call it a sort of white paper on steroids. The reason I say that is that he actually told me that he paid $25,000 for this paper. The document's sort of 35 pages, 15,000 word report. It references 25 medical papers. Anyway, I read through it and I gave some feedback on where I thought it was weak and what I thought could areas of improvement. And it all landed well with him, and he said, "Oh, okay, well maybe you should come in and actually share that with the team, and have you done any of this work before, and et cetera, et cetera." So I was honest with him, and I said that my experience certainly meant I could deliver this sort of project, but I hadn't done that before. So in terms of when he asked me about pricing, if I actually did a report, I sort of said, "Well, I'd probably charge the same amount, but given this is the first one, I'd probably do it for half that." Anyway, the point is, it's a huge piece of work, I've started reading the paper, so it's something I can do, and I think it's a really interesting area to get into, but I just want to take the right steps to make sure that basically I ace every step when I'm in front of people and how I approach it and what sort of avenues you think maybe you've got some suggestions on how I should tackle this.
Okay, so first of all, it sounds very exciting. That's fantastic. So you already are in talks with him about revamping the piece, right? Is that what you've proposed?
He sort of asked me. He's a friend in the industry, but obviously he's in a very high pressure job. He's not going to do any favors. The favor he would do is if he thinks I can bring value, he would open a door, and then it's for me to sort of do the rest. And he was kind enough to share the confidential report, and he even gave me the all 25 medical papers to reference it. And all I've done is I've read through the final report, and I've given suggestions which he agrees with. So in his head, he's like, okay, well, potentially this guy can do more. We haven't got further than, I mean, I guess the options for me are to offer to revamp it, and or simply to just give them feedback and say, look, consider me for the next one. But I'm not, I guess that's where I'm not sure. One of my hesitations is, I've got to be realistic about, in order to do a really good job on this, there's a reason that they pay a lot of money. It's a lot of work, to read all 25 papers, to get a really compelling sort of, ultimately you're selling, an interventional gizmo. So it's a lot of work, and I don't know that I'd be able to wow them in the short time I've got available. So I was kind of thinking maybe just stick with the revamp, or I'm not sure. I mean, what do you have any, just listening to the context?
I do. I have an idea. But first of all, do you happen to know who wrote the piece?
It was an agency.
An agency, okay. And is it an agency that specializes in that industry, that topic?
It's got to be, yeah. They're a major player, huge company that I'm sure they just go to an agency. What surprised me is the quality of it, considering how much they paid.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not surprised for a couple of reasons. So I've seen the same thing happen, not so much from an agency, but an analyst firm. So if you go to an analyst firm in any of kind of the big industries and you say, look, I want to write a paper on this topic, and here's kind of the here's the angle, right? They're not going to agree to write it the way you want to write it. What they're going to typically do is do the research and then write a paper on what they uncovered, either on from their own independent research or from existing research, right? And what you're getting, and they're going to charge $25,000 or more, what you're getting there is their stamp, their branding, because they're going to be able to put their name on it, and that's going to give you so much more credibility than if it's a paper you wrote internally, right? So, hey, Forrester wrote this paper on this. That carries a lot of weight. So that's what, even, but in many cases it's not written extremely well. I mean, usually these firms do a decent job, but you're not paying for the quality of the writing, you're paying for the stamp of approval, if you will, right? Because they have the authority. The idea that came to mind right away, James, is you have someone who's willing to open that door, but he's not the final decision maker, right?
Yeah.
For this project. So unless you have – do you have anything in your background, in your portfolio? Can you really – because one of the questions these people are going to ask, whatever committee or whatever group of people is going to look at this, is, okay, what's your experience here? So what can you offer? What do you have anything you can speak to?
I mean, all I can say, I mean, what is my background? So I'm, a couple of degrees in law. Then I spent most of my time in the energy sector. I'm currently in a sort of commercial consulting firm. I think the point about this is that I'm comfortable with complexity, with ambiguity, with learning difficult new concepts and terms, and ultimately producing a very tight, compelling argument and, you know, structuring a piece that pulls out the right stuff. And honestly, I don't think it matters if you're writing about medical gizmos or you know, plumbing. It's the same skill.
Yeah.
I think where I'll fall down is that they, you know, of course, I had to look a lot of stuff up. You know, I wasn't familiar with a lot of terminology, so guess what? It took me twice as long. But does that mean the end result's any worse or better? No, absolutely not. It's really kind of – it hits me harder. But obviously, that's not how people see it. They're not comfortable with people who don't speak the medical lingo initially, or at least I guess that's the place. So that's – I think that's where I have to work hardest. And I don't know – whilst the guy that I reviewed it, he's very happy with my feedback. Obviously, as you say, it's not him I've got to convince. It's a team of people, and you know, if they're willing to pay $25K for a document, they don't want to mess around with some guy maybe who's — that's my feeling anyway. They just — it's too big a leap for me, and I'm just wondering if I should try and position myself, somehow demonstrate value and sort of build up to producing one of these reports. But I'm not entirely sure how to go about it.
So This firm had the credibility. They have this agency. They had some things that they could really tout to justify the $25K. It's going to be a little bit harder for you. But so here's the way I would approach it. I wouldn't try to sell revamping or rewriting or writing it from scratch, because there's a high risk to them. So because of the high risk, they're going to want to know what your credentials are, right? And that's where you're going to fall short, not because you don't have what it takes, but let's just face it, they're going to be skeptical, right? So what about selling some sort of audit? What if you could package some sort of audit and recommendation report? So sell it as a prepackaged or productized consulting, in other words. So if you're not selling hours, you're just selling, look, here's – what I'd like to do is this. I can help you pinpoint exactly what needs to change here, how this will be a much stronger piece. And I'll go in. I will go through. I will pour through the research. I will go through the paper, and I will I'll give you the deliverable is an actual report, a short report that details my recommendations, that goes through where it's missing the mark, and then a list of very specific recommendations. And then you charge a flat fee for that. So, and I'm just throwing a number out there just to give you an example. So if rewriting would be $25,000, revamping it or editing it would be, let's say, $10,000. So this would be, let's say, $3,000-$4,000, just to kind of put it in perspective, okay? So you're giving them something. It's going to be hard for them to go from zero, meaning they've never spent any money with you, then never hired you, all the way to $25,000 or even $15,000 or $10,000. But it's going to be a lot easier for them.
Yeah, you're saying like a revamp might be, say, $10,000, but a kind of an audit, a recommendation report might only be $5,000 or something.
Yeah, it's a small amount that it's easier for them to say yes to. It's low risk, right? You want them to understand, and it sounds like they already do. You have some insider information that they know that there's something wrong with it. They know that it's not hitting the mark. So if they could spend a few thousand with someone who could detail this and show them exactly why and then what they would need to change, then guess what? The probability of them hiring you to fix it is much, much higher. So it's kind of a stepped approach. You're not asking for the whole thing. And in a way, the audit and recommendations, it's a little bit of a loss leader for you. I wouldn't look at it as how can I, you know, how can I make a fortune. You're doing it and you're taking some of the risk because you're doing it hoping that you'll get the full job.
Yeah. And that's the idea. Okay, so then maybe not even this one, but they may approach me for one in the future and say, right, do you want to pitch for this? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Figure out, okay, what, and the easiest way to do it is in terms of time. Unfortunately, the first one you do is always the longest because you don't have a framework for that deliverable yet, so you'd have to create one. But,
yeah.
You know, figure, okay, what would this take me? To go through, read it, go through the research, create a report. You know, let's say we're talking 30 hours or 20, let's say 20 hours. What would I want to make off of this? And then maybe kind of a minimum and maximum. And then depending on what you know about the situation, then I would move the needle up or down within that range, and I would just quote that.
Okay.
It's easier to make a case for that, I think.
Absolutely. Because I'm also mindful that, you know, if I wanted to do the revamp, it's pretty much you have to do the whole piece of work yourself, but you only get 10 instead of – I mean, it's not even the money. It's just, it's actually the time. I think it's quite a significant piece of work. But that's really helpful. So, sorry, the second part of this, the other area, ironically, the two areas that I think I've got most opportunities outside my area of expertise. So it's in bid writing. So in the UK, the government has sort of released, I don't know, something like £1 billion for, you call them general practitioners, but sort of small doctors, surgeries, to bid for this money for innovation, specifically for innovation. And, you know, I know two or three doctors who are faced with this task, and obviously they're trying to do it themselves, and they're very bright people, but, you know, time is a factor, and they're not. You know, they're not bid writers. You know, and I'll be honest, all I've done is I've bought three or four, you know, books on bid writing. I've read through, you know, how to write a winning bid. It looks fun. It looks well within my area of sort of comfort zone, and I think I'd be good at it. So, but again, how would I position myself in terms of they kind of know that I'm interested, but I don't have a track record? What would you suggest I do in terms of approaching them? How would you approach them? What would be my position initially, or just to open the sort of discussion?
Well, the first thing I would ask myself before you even talk to them is this something that that I'd want to do a lot of, right? Because, like you said, you have to read through some books. There's going to be a learning curve, so you're not really going to make real profit until after the first or second one. You got to get a couple
right.
under your belt in order to get the hang of it. So there, and of course, you don't really know the answer until you've done it, but there has to be an interest. The interest has to be high enough that you're willing to do more than that, because you're not really going to recoup your costs initially. Secondly, I would go with the physicians where you do have a strong relationship and make them a good offer. So I would base it on value if I were you, meaning I would figure out what are we talking about in terms of time? Forget about expertise, because that's another one. You definitely want to sell your expertise in the business world. But what is the opportunity cost? So if they have to take 15 or 20 hours to do this right of their own time, what's the opportunity cost there for them? And as doctors, I'm sure it's significant. And then I would sell it based on that. It's like, okay, well, here's the opportunity cost, and here's the potential upside. And let's say the opportunity cost is $10,000. You know, I could do this for, and that's the opportunity cost alone. I could do this for $6,000. And, you know, sure, I haven't done this before, but it's a pretty sweet deal. And you're leveraging the relationship there. And you're explaining how you're going to go about this. See, be completely transparent. Let them know that I wouldn't say figuring it out, but you have a pretty good idea of how you're going to approach this. You're doing quite a bit of research, and if they're willing to take a chance here, you know, at the end of the day, they're going to save money when you consider opportunity costs alone. So that's.
So you mean
I would
actually
look
articulate
at it somewhere
that
way.
To them?
Articulate that to them?
Yeah, you actually spell it out, sort of say, you know, how long does it take you to, without sort of, I could probably say, without, how long does it take you to do the last one? As you say, okay, 20 hours or something. Okay, well, you know how much that costs you. I think with my skills, I could probably do a really good job for 6,000. Is that kind of what you were saying, your approach?
Something like that, but I would find out from them what the opportunity cost is. You can't really do a real good value sell here unless you understand the true cost of them doing this on their own.
Okay.
Now, of course, whether they have the money or not, that's a totally different issue, but you want to price it low enough that not only is the risk low enough for them, but it's a no-brainer in terms of their ability to free up that time.
Yeah. Do you have any idea? I mean, I've got no – the one thing I don't have information on is what people charge to do bids.
I have no idea. I have no idea. Yeah, proposals and you know what I would look for? Do some research on grant proposals.
Okay.
Because it's similar. So what do people charge to write grant proposals? And see if you can. I know you'll find a range online.
Okay.
And I would use that as a benchmark.
Okay. That's helpful. Final question, but I think you've already answered it earlier. I was a bit panicked because I've really struggled with my positioning statement, partly because the opportunities I'm seeing are just not tying directly into, you know, my experience. You are clearly still doing the kind of feedback on all the websites, right?
Oh, of course. So you got for those of you guys who haven't finished your website yet, I'm happy to do a website review to anyone, and it could be any time during the duration of the program. So no rush, but you know you don't want to wait till the very end either.
Not because of me,
just because you want to be prospecting, and to prospect, you really should have a website up.
Yeah. Okay, Ed, well, thank you. That's very helpful.
Oh, you're quite welcome. And again, guys, if you want me to review your website, when you're ready, just we have a thread in the forum just for that. Just post your URL there. If you don't have it, you just have it in a Word document. Just make sure it's all in one Word document and post it as a file. All those instructions are in the website review thread. So just find it in the forum. You'll see it there. It's kind of close to the top. And just make sure to read through all the instructions there. And, I'm happy to give you a basic review of your site. I'm not going to go in there and use track changes and edit your actual copy. I'll give you some suggestions. And you can see if you go through the reviews that I've given others, you'll get an idea of what y'all give you when you're ready. All right, let's see. So Jupiter, Florida. Oh, here we go. Sharon, you are on.
Again, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, I actually had been meaning to ask you this previously and just didn't have it available at the time. But I, you know, I do a lot of PR and media relations, and I actually just had a story picked up that, you know, I try to be as concise and creative in writing my pitches, and I just had a story picked up by a blog of the Palm Beach Post that runs in this local area I work in. And I also have a pretty major newspaper article about me that I pitched and had run to promote this nonprofit, Palm Beach Score, but also to promote my own business. It ran back in August, but it talks about me being changing. It says, Jupiter PR Specialist starts new chapter in life as Encore Entrepreneur, and they call Encore Entrepreneurs people who start a business at over age 50. And they were having a workshop for these new people doing this. And it mentions that I have my own firm which offers business and promotional writing, public relations, and writing company and personal histories. And it is on the front page of their local lifestyle section. I'm wondering how to use these things to promote my business, or if I should include them on my website. I have them, some of them, but I don't have this one. The big article about me isn't even on my website yet. How do you use these kinds of things when I'm not really trying to be a great PR person anymore? I'm pitching myself now as a business writer.
Mm-hmm. Well, so but it question, still speaks, well, it still gives you credibility, right?
It's, oh, yeah, because it's press. And, in fact, I just, while I was waiting, I just actually put a little blurb on my Facebook page, so happy to have my business writing and pitch picked up by the Palm Beach Post, and I have a link to it. It's going to be a great event. Anybody local, entrepreneurs, check it out.
So one way is in your bio, and this is an easy one, in your bio, make sure to reference the fact that, you know, you have appeared or have been quoted in the Palm Beach Post and yada, yada, and yada, yada, right? So I do that in my website. I've been interviewed.
I've been quoted in a thousand different sources over my career.
Oh, then even better. Even better.
I've not listened to them.
Then go ahead and do that. So that's an easy one I would do immediately. Then there might be places where you could link to that in your bio. You know, maybe one of them is you link to the most impressive one.
Okay.
Like that article you sent me. The other one is, you know, these are great things to keep. I would turn them into PDFs, and you
right.
could use them as a way to stay in touch with people. You can use them as so if you're sending in a quote to a client, you can include, you know, one of them. Oh, by the way, and so Cindy, here's the fee agreement, and I'm also including an article in the Palm Beach Post where my business is featured.
Okay.
So that kind of thing, it just adds a little bit more weight and credibility. Right.
Cool.
So I had someone I was talking to recently about Facebook advertising, a Facebook consultant. And he did this, and I've seen this a bunch of times, but, you know, I know the tactic, and it still works, even though I know it. So he had a picture of where he was interviewed on the show, and I think it was a local Fox network, right? But you know those screenshots where you can see, like, the TV, the whole TV screen, and it shows that it's on Fox 5 and whatever. And then he included an excerpt from an article where he was quoted in – it was a major newspaper, Washington Post or something like that. And that's impressive. You know, that's impressive. So
okay.
use that.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Yeah, even if you're quoted about, you know, kind of the PR side, it doesn't matter.
Right.
We still live in a society where, you know, if you are in print, if you've been quoted somewhere, if you've appeared somewhere like that, a newspaper, a magazine – a show, that's still very impressive, even in today's world where, you know, you
everybody's
much,
on YouTube.
Everyone's on YouTube, exactly. So my friend Coach Jen Lee, and she's the one who kind of woke me up to this. I mean, I kind of knew it, but she made it very clear. So Jen has built this whole coaching business. A big part of it has been speaking and appearing on her local Fox affiliate. That's what reminded me of that, in Orlando. The way she – and I thought, well – because then she told me, oh, most of my coaching clients aren't even in Orlando. I said, well, I don't get it. Why do you keep going to the Orlando station? Because I thought that's what you were doing. This is brilliant. She says, it doesn't really matter. I just want to show people that I'm constantly on TV. And because that alone carries weight regardless of where you live. And it's so true. And she said, anyone can do that. So if you can get quoted here, if you can appear there, it's not about what you talked about or the fact that they only quoted you like a short line, even though they interviewed you for 20 minutes. It doesn't matter. It's the fact that you could put that publication's name or that channel's information and logo right next to you.
Okay. I'm rarely the spokesperson anymore, but I was in a video that was done by a major South Florida newspaper last year. I was the featured spokesperson on their video, is like the most recent one I have.
Oh, okay.
So, unfortunately, it's hard to get to and make into a thing you can run yourself because it's got all their commercials in it. But the organization that I do the newsletter for has it on their website, so I can probably pull it off of there.
See what you can do, yeah.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Okay. All right, so I have someone in London, Ontario. You are on.
Hello. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Who's
Hi.
This?
Yes, this is Christy. Hi, thanks for getting back to me earlier. Yes.
You bet.
So my question is, is there a place or a site where we can see winning samples of B2B writings so that we can, you know, learn more about how they are being written? Like right now, we're told to just do samples, but, you know, is there a place where we can refer to see the actual samples that works, whether it's email, it's case studies or white papers, besides the AWAI website?
Yeah, that's a good question. I can't think of one source because it's a bit fragmented, right? So there's not one place where you can see a bunch of winning copy in all of all different types. So you may have to kind of compile it and have a list of sources.
Okay.
So you mentioned white papers. I would, if you're interested, are you interested in writing white papers?
Yes. White papers and case studies.
Okay. So let's take those two. So the first thing I would do is I would absolutely buy Gordon Graham's book, White Papers for Dummies, because not only is it just the best reference for writing these, it's got a ton of information on how you approach them, how to talk with a client about them, and I think he's got a couple of sample white papers in there. And I think Gordon's got a couple of some more samples on his website too. So you just look at someone who you know is fairly well known or seems to know their stuff and have a lot of clients in the area of white papers or case studies, and then download some of their samples and study them. Now, you know, are they winning? Well, you can't really say that, but if it's someone who's well recognized, like Gordon, he's pretty much the top white paper writer in the world that I know of, at least the most well known, then you know you have something really solid.
Okay.
So that's one thing, and I did that, by the way, when I was learning, and that's exactly how I approached it. I downloaded a lot of white papers and case studies and other pieces in, you know, from people and from organizations that were reputable. And you know what? There were some organizations that were very well known, like Oracle, for instance, and I downloaded some of their stuff, and I could tell there was something that was off. So they're not all extremely well written. You need to trust your instincts, too.
Mm-hmm.
So if you read something and it just doesn't seem right, then, you know, it's make a note of that. Case studies, I mean, there are a lot of great case study writers out there. One of the most well known, that's because that's all she does, is Casey Hibbard. I think it's Compelling Cases. Casey Hibbard. Compelling-cases.com. And I'm sure she's got some samples on there that you could look at. And again, same thing. Download them, print them, study them. I print this stuff and I just go and write on the margins. And I make notes to myself. What did I like about this? Something I need to maybe copy myself, this particular way she transitioned. I look for similarities in her samples. She's also got a great book, Stories That Sell, that you can get on Amazon. It's really that. It's just kind of going to sites of people that are well-known for that type of work and looking at some of their samples. And then the second thing you could do is the one I mentioned, where you go to organizations that publish these and you download their stuff and then you take a look at it, but with a critical eye, and you look for things you like and don't like about them.
Okay. Now, if we see things that we don't like, can we approach them to say that, can we rewrite it or things like that?
Like, I don't like that approach. I don't like that approach. I call it calling their baby ugly.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
It's like your baby's ugly.
Yeah, just wondering. Yeah, I know.
It's a very difficult thing.
Yeah, okay.
Some people do it, and they can do it graciously, but it's I wouldn't do it.
No, I won't do
it. Now, what you could do,
if
you see somebody, a company that's, you could tell they're really struggling, but you could tell they're trying.
Mm-hmm.
One way around that is you don't tell them, I saw this on your site and it really needs work. I'd like to talk to you about how I can improve it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You acknowledge that they have, let's say, white papers. Acknowledge that they have a series of white papers on their site.
Mm-hmm.
And then just ask them if they ever work with outside writers. And if so, what would it take to be considered?
Okay.
So why could that work? Okay. If they're not doing a good job, they probably know it, even if they don't admit it. They just kind of know that maybe it's not the best.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are gracious enough not to point it out and you just offer yourself to them,
mm-hmm.
then that might be enough for them to say, you know what, we haven't used an outside writer. We got Jim over here who's been writing our stuff internally. But now that you mention this, we have been talking about getting an outside writer.
Okay. But the other thing is, the other thing is, because as someone new to copywriting, I'm just thinking that the chance of me getting into white papers or case study could be slim, because I may have to just start off writing something as simple as an email, you know, or a landing page. Things like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
you need to be willing to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You need
okay.
to be willing to do that. So it was the same way. I wrote the copy for the back of potato chip bags for this company. They just hired me for it. I don't ask. It's a long story. I wrote a sales letter for a friend of mine who had that training company, meaning it was her. She was the only trainer.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote that letter for that quilting author. She wanted to get her book into quilting supply stores. I wrote a landing page for a financial services because they sold financial newsletters. Now, this is a bigger company, so I was really excited because this is like a real company. But it was something I knew nothing about. Financial stuff,
okay.
And it just. But I did my best. I said, you know what? I hate this. I hate the topic. I'm not good at this.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to do a ton of research. But you know what? I'm gonna do the best job ever. And
okay.
I did, and they noticed. The client loved me. So I did like three or four of these, and then eventually
mm-hmm.
I moved on to other things. But it was like I would say six, no, more than that, probably closer to 10 projects. Before I landed my first white paper.
Oh, okay. Okay, good to know. It's
yeah.
kind of scary thinking of going out to write for a real client.
Yeah, it is. But that's like I said earlier, it's if it's not scary, you're probably not pushing yourself.
Yeah, okay. Now, the second question is, for my website, the reason why I didn't use my own name is I was thinking along the line that maybe down the road I could start up a mini agency where we have a few writers and designers to work together and, you know, basically just like what an agency does, you know, I can do all the coordinations, I can get the work and, you know, someone else can do the writing. But before I can go up to that stage, I was thinking I should at least know how to write myself. I should be a copywriter first. That was, I think, maybe that's maybe my plan in the future, but who knows what will happen.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I think that's fine.
Like,
I'm okay with that, especially if you have ideas of future growth. The one thing I wouldn't do, though, and again, I haven't looked at your site yet, just make sure that your site is written in the first person. So in other words, don't use third person.
No, it's just about myself. For now, it's about me. Yeah. But
don't pretend that there's a team right now, because if there isn't a team.
There isn't a team. I just call it a pro B2Bcopywriter.com. That's it. But it could include other writers later on, you know.
Perfect.
Okay.
I think that's a good idea.
You know, I don't know. Anyway, I think that's about it for me. I still haven't really come down to narrowing who I should target first. But anyway, I'll go to your webinar first. Thank you very much, Ed.
Oh, you're welcome, Christy.
Thanks.
Okay, so again, if you have a question, you're on the phone, star 2 raises your hand. And if you're on the webcast, just type in your question, hit submit, and I will see it. I'm checking here the webcast. I don't see any new ones. Let me check back in the phone. I'll give you guys just a minute just in case. Great questions, by the way, guys. This is good. You guys are taking action, I can tell, just by your questions. So that's fantastic. All right. Got a number here from Upland, California, 909 area code. You're on.
Hey, this is Ryan, R.K. Anthony.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good, man. What's cooking?
So I have a few questions here that are kind of disjointed, but let's see. My first one, really, I've been having some trouble getting a schedule for practicing my writing and then balancing that between doing that and getting the business launched. And I'm just curious how you handle practicing your writing skills, you know, during when you're either trying to do a launch like this or even during dry spells when you may not have a lot of client projects going on. Just kind of what's your routine for just working on your chops, basically? So that's what I'm having trouble with, getting that balance right now.
Yeah, so I find that you have to have a time for it, and you have to have a certain amount of time. For me, it's early in the morning. So one thing that I did, and I did this for a long time, is very early in the morning, I would actually, I would pick the exercise ahead of time, so I don't have to guess. Because there's nothing worse than, okay, I'm here at my desk, now what should I do? And then you start wasting time because you don't know. So you have to know ahead of time what you're going to do. But I had a couple of them, and one of them was to actually hand copy a white paper or any piece of content, marketing content and copy that I thought was very well done. And I know that sounds tedious, but I would actually hand copy that. I had a stack of yellow pads, and I would just start hand copying. There's something about the physical nature of hand copying it on a separate notepad that helps you understand the structure of a piece at a deeper level. So that's one thing. Hold on a second.
Yeah, that's good.
So that's one of them. The second one is something I alluded to a little earlier, which is when you look at samples of other people who are well known for what they do, print them out and read it very carefully and make notes. So this isn't actually writing, but you're deconstructing that piece. You could do it in the margins, or you could do it on a notepad, whatever, but actually write out what you like, don't like. Why does this work? And then I was really big into looking at the framework. So I would actually create like a cheat sheet. Okay, for this white paper, here's what he did first. He had something about this, and then he moved on to this. So I would have kind of a wireframe or a skeleton, if you will, of the piece by the end. And I did that with a lot of pieces, and they were white papers, brochures. And what it gave me wasn't just practice, but it also, I ended up with all these cheat sheets on the structure for a lot of these marketing pieces, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something else that was helpful for me. And then, you know what, there's something to be said for just writing, period. I think there is a connection. I know there is. I can't prove it. But just writing, stream of consciousness writing, where you're just typing away for a certain amount of time, either a certain number of pages or a certain amount of time, let's say 3 full pages or, you know, 20 minutes, 15 minutes, you set a timer and you don't stop. It's just whatever's on your mind, you just keep going and going. It does a couple of things. Not only do you practice your writing, but you're also just getting a lot of thoughts out of your head, and that really helps clear things up. So that's another one that I practice very frequently, and it helps me. Are those helpful?
Yeah, this is good. So I have these written down. At least it gives me an idea of what I should be doing, because I'm really a member of many, many programs, and eventually the overwhelming information just kind of frustrates me and I don't really have a framework on what to practice, so I'm just going to focus on these three things. I've heard this before, but I guess hearing your approach, it's just going to focus me onto these things for a while, so that's good.
Yeah, let me add another one, RK. So you mentioned programs. One thing I like to do with programs is create some notes. So let's say you got a program and it's like, let's say, 3 hours worth of content broken up into a bunch of different lessons. I actually create kind of the Cliff Notes version. That's my goal. So I'll either go through it all once without taking notes, just to kind of understand the material and where it's going, and then I'll listen to it a second time, and that's where I'm taking notes. And my goal is to create a Cliff Notes or a cheat sheet that's what I can now use to study from now on. And I find that the retention of the material is super high. So it gives me a very definite structure or approach that I take with every training program that I buy, and it keeps it from being overwhelming. And it increases my retention of the material. It helps me apply it sooner, too.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I'll definitely try that. That sounds like a good approach. Thank you for that. Also, I have another question that is sort of related to white papers, and I was I recently graduated last year from college, so I came from a very structured understanding of APA style and citing pretty much anything you say, and I'm just trying to understand the best practice in real world setting in terms of writing white papers and how citations look in a white paper. Is it standard practice to do it like a college standard research paper where you're adding it inside the paper, or is it more standard to have your references just separate on a, you know, kind of on a separate document that you can refer to, but not necessarily in the white paper itself?
Now, the standard is to have it in the paper, and in most cases, well, I've seen it both ways. I prefer to have endnotes rather than footnotes. So, but it's and it's not quite AP style or APA style. It's kind of a combination. I don't get too hung up on the actual you know, like in college, a professor will dock you, you know, 5 points if you miss a period or if you don't have parentheses over this. Or I don't worry too much about that. I worry about being consistent in the structure of my endnotes. But I don't worry. I don't even know what the heck I'm following, to be honest with you. I'm just doing something that makes sense to me. And by the way, so Gordon's book is great for that, and he gives you some more ideas and on references and how to cite and all that.
Yeah, very cool. I just got that book yesterday, still in the mail, so I'm excited about that.
Okay. Yeah.
Cool. And further on to this question, do you include those citations as part of the deliverable when you give it to your client? Or, I mean, I guess if it's part of the white paper, it would already be as an endnote, but Do you include all your references to your clients, or do they typically not really want those references as part of the deliverable?
Yeah, what I do is, so of course, they're, like you said, they're the end notes, so they're going to be there, but I also like to include them on a separate document. So what I do is I'll just copy and paste them pretty much. I mean, I clean it up a little bit into a separate document. I turn it into a PDF, and I submit that as well. So it's kind of like, hey, these are all my sources. And you may want to add things there, like if you interviewed somebody, but, you know, it was internally to the company, so you didn't really need to cite it in the white paper. You could include that there. And you could also include, in case of those interviews, if you did record it, you can also include the MP3 files of those recordings.
That's cool. Okay, cool.
It's a nice thing to give to the client, because many times they don't expect it, and it's just nice.
Yeah.
I tell you where it's really nice to do, and I always do it, is if you do not so much a white paper, but a ghostwritten article. If you write an article for an executive in the company, it's going to appear under their byline. The tendency there is not necessarily to cite references, but I always cite references in a separate document for the client. So that way they know where I got the information.
Yeah. Very cool. Also, you've mentioned something about a research analyst firm with a previous caller, and I'm just interested if you've ever used a research analyst firm, or if you have people that do your research for you, or do you typically just do all of your own research? And if you do, do you purchase the hard research for maybe like journal articles or something? I know this can get expensive, and that's kind of my concern, is where to get those hard data articles if I need it for a white paper.
Yeah, so I do my own research, and I've tried to outsource some of it in the past. The reason it hasn't worked out as well as I thought it would is that when you're researching for something like this, only you know certain things that the research may not be privy to, right? So you're going to go down a path, and you're quickly going to know if maybe this is not where you should go with it. So there's certain benefits to doing your own research that, sure, it's going to take you a little bit longer, but you're going to miss some things if you try to outsource it. So that's just my take on it. I prefer to do my own research. Unless it's something very definite that I'm having a hard time finding, then I might consider going out to a researcher, and I've done that a couple of times. And when it's been very definite, it has worked out okay. In terms of paid research, I try to work around it first. So let's say if I need to pay $30 to get a copy of that article, and I know it's got good information, if I can't get it any other way, then I'll go ahead and buy it. But many times you can get the press release for that research report, for instance. This works really well with research reports. You may not be able to get all the information, but the press release will usually highlight some of the key findings in that report. So I will do that. Sometimes the research report might be sponsored by a vendor. So let's say Forrester wrote it, but, you know, ABC Solutions was one of the sponsors, and you can download it for free from ABC Solutions' website because they're one of the sponsors. So I'll do things like that. Many times I can get around it that way, but at the end of the day, then the third way is ask the client if they have a membership to that analyst website. So, hey, do you have a membership to Forrester? I'm going to mute you real quick, RK, because there's a lot of background noise. But, do you have a membership? And, oh, yeah, well, I forgot to tell you, Ed. Yeah, we do. So what do you need? And I'll get it for you. You just let them know, and they're able to get it for you. So those are key ways. And sometimes you can even get it in the abstract. So sometimes in the abstract, you'll have enough information because, again, just like with a press release, there'll be a summary of the key findings. So, but sometimes I would try those things first, and if you can't get what you need, then if it's within reason, I would go ahead and pay it if you think this is just too good to pass up. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. That makes sense. Cool. Well, I appreciate your help on that. I took all the notes down, so I'll be following up with this. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Oh, you're welcome. All right. Let's see. Yilda in San Antonio, you're on.
Hi, Ted. I was listening recently to one of your podcasts with Lee Benham.
Uh-huh.
And she was talking about, I think, the umbrella niche. I don't exactly remember if it was vertical or horizontal, but it's the type of niche. In particular, the example that she provided was the umbrella type that combines two similar niches, in that case, health and wellness, I think she mentioned. And I'm focusing on the AEC industry because of my background. And when I was listening to her, I thought about, I also have experience in environmental technology. Since those are two related niches, can I say, for the purpose of this program, that I work with companies who sell technical products and services in the environmental technology and AEC industry, or should I just focus on the AEC, which is most of my experiences?
I would do both. I think you're fine doing both. Because there are some similarities, right? You're not saying AEC, which, by the way, for those of you who don't know, architectural engineering and construction, you're not saying AEC and yoga instructors, right?
Right?
So that would be way too different, even though I have seen some people make that work. But there is somewhat of a connection. I think most people can understand that there is that connection. What I would avoid, though, is don't keep adding to that list because you're thinking it's going to give you better chances of other things. And I'm not saying that you're going in that direction, but I see some people who then add like five or six industries to that or target markets, and it just that's unnecessary. I think two up to three is fine. I would draw the line there, though.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I've seen some people do, and very successfully, technology, healthcare, and financial services.
Oh, wow.
And when you think about it, I mean, they're really not that related. However, it also doesn't sound awkward, does it? I mean, I can understand at a subconscious level what the similarities might be. As a prospect.
Right. Okay.
All right. Any, is that it? Any other questions?
That was it. Thank you.
Okay. Oh, you're welcome. All right. So, again, if anyone still has questions, star two raises your hand. There was a question from Taylor here on the webcast. He says, there is a CMO dinner happening in a couple of weeks, and I'm desperate to attend. However, it is only chief marketing officers or director of marketing. What do you suggest I do to beg, borrow, and steal my way into that roundtable? There is one person I've met once who's involved. Should I exploit that resource? So, Taylor, just to make sure I understand, are you saying that the only people who are invited are CMOs and directors of marketing? Or you're saying that, unfortunately, the only people who are going to be there are CMOs and directors of marketing. I don't think it's the latter, because I would love to be in a room full of CMOs and directors of marketing. But if you're trying to figure out, okay, well, those are the only people who are invited, how do you get in? I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is, can you volunteer? I don't know what the organization is, but can you volunteer to help out, help put it together? so many organizations are looking for people to help out because nobody wants to help. Nobody wants to do the grunt work, you know. Nobody wants to help set up. Nobody wants to help coordinate things that involve, you know, phone calls and checking with people and making runs to get another table or get this or whatever. There's just all kinds of things, as you can imagine, that go into putting an event together, and it requires people. And it's a lot of work. So sometimes even writing, I've written a program for an event, not the program, but part of a program. I wrote a bunch of bios for this big annual technology event. You know, so even volunteering to do that, in return, you get to attend. So see what you could do. I think that might be, especially if you know someone who's involved, like you said, that might be, I would approach it that way, because even if you know the person, it's so much more powerful to say, hey, Susan, is there any way I could volunteer to help out with the event? And then offer some suggestions on what you could do, right, in order to be able to attend the event, right? So offer to help first, and then ask if there's an opportunity in to attend or to get in there in return for your help and offering your talents. Okay, so Taylor clarified, yes, only CMOs and directors of marketing are allowed to attend. And, you know, depending on what you know about this person or if you think there might be concern about you going in there, might being the only non-CMO or director of marketing, you may want to assure them, listen, I'm not going to go in there and be obnoxious. I'll be, you know me, Susan, I'm very professional. Of course, I'll have some business cards with me, and If people ask me what I do, I will gladly let them know. But I'll remain a true professional throughout. All right. I don't see any other questions, so I'll give you guys a few more seconds just in case. I want to make sure I don't miss anyone. All right, so if there's nothing else, we'll go ahead and close for today. Again, we'll have this recording posted by tomorrow end of day in the student portal. And as I mentioned earlier, next week we'll roll out session 4. That's when we're going to start getting into prospecting outreach, specifically with emails. So it's a bit of a longer session because I include some supplementary materials, including a supplementary lesson. So just budget accordingly, but I'm going to throw a lot at you, and now we're going to obviously start getting into the actual prospecting and knocking on doors. So if you haven't finished your website, now is the time to kind of start wrapping things up if you can. That way you can approach this material fresh and not feel rushed, but of course you still have time. You know, it's not like it's the end of the world if you haven't finished. I recommend that if you haven't finished, don't feel that you can't go through this material. I would still go through it because it will give you an idea of what's ahead, and that way you won't feel as anxious. So with that, we'll go ahead and close out for today. We'll continue the conversation in the forum. You guys have a great rest of the day, and we'll talk again real soon.